Morning, Boker Tov. Today's daf is Bavitzia. There's a feedback. 1 second. Today's daf is Bavitzia, daf Samaches. Bavitzia Samaches. We left off yesterday. In the night here, we got to the two dots on Samaches and Beis, but I believe in the morning, we're still a little before that. I think we are smack in the middle of the page. In the morning, we reached Amar Marzitra, which made Rav Papa. Is that what we got up to? Or we didn't get that far, even. Rav Papa Rav Huna. That's what we have. Okay. A proper one to Yeshua. So we're really just before the midway point of the page on Samach Zayin Abeis. Again, we're continuing a conversation of when you have a loan and the borrower pledged a mashkin, a property to the lender, and the various dinim that apply. So let's pick it up from Rav Papa Rav Huna Beit Yeshua Amit Avayu a little before the midway point in Samach Zayin Abeis. Hi, Mashkanta. They both said, Rav Papa Rav Yeshua said, Hi, Mashkanta, Mashkin, Basu Salki, in a place where the agreement is that the borrower can come and pay back the lender at any time and throw him off the land. So meaning, the agreement was, let's say that the lender is going to be able to sit on the land, the mashkin, for 5 years. But if the borrower pays up, whenever he pays up, he can throw the lender off the land. We're going to see later today, in today's daf, that there was a minimum that if a lender has a right to a land, even b'asur the misalki, in a place where the borrower can pay up, misalki means he means misalki, and get rid of him, get rid of the lender has a minimum of a year. We'll see that. But our Gemara is not getting involved in that nuance of whether it's a year or more or less. Our Gemara is just saying, in general, an asur the misalki that the borrower could pay back and get rid of the lender, that land that the lender received, the land that the lender received from the borrower as a mashkin, that land, the lender himself, if he has a creditor, his creditor cannot repossess that land, because since the borrower could take it away at any time, it's not considered that it belongs to the lender. And very similarly, if the lender dies, his bechor will not take pishnayim in that land because he doesn't really own it. It's not really fully his. The borrower can be misalkim any time. And lastly, shvius mishamet asa. Shvius would be mishamet the debt. Halacha is that if there is a, of course, every shvita, all outstanding debts are mishamet. All outstanding debts are mishamet. But the if the creditor has a property that's secured that goes against the debt and it's in his possession, so Shvius would have a mishamet because to an extent he's already considered to have collected the loan. So Shvius is not going to absolve the loan. But in a case where the borrower can misalk at any moment, over there the lender is not considered to have collected the loan, and therefore Shvius will be mishamet such a loan. It will absolve that debt. However, in a place where the minig is, the borrower cannot just get rid of the lender before the due date, the term that was given to where on Samach Zayin Beis, we're roughly right by the midpoint of the page. Now we're actually at the midpoint of the page, Samach Zayin Beis. So in a place where the lender cannot be pushed off the field by the borrower before the due date, before the term of the agreement is over, so then Balchayv gave amenu. It's considered as if the lender really owns this property right now, and therefore Balchayv could take it from the lender. If the lender's own Balchayv, if the lender dies and he owes money to his own Balchayv, the Balchayv could take it. Further, the Balchayv can take Pishnayim from it, and Shvius will take and not cancel such a debt because it's considered to have right now to be the possession is in the possession of the lender himself, and the Shvius will not, it's like he's not going to collect, he has it, and therefore the Shvius will not be Mishamet. Hi, Mashkanta. Biyasa Misalki, a Mashkin, in a place where the minig is that you Misalik, again, the borrower can get rid of the lender for the property by paying back the debt. Misalkile, Vafimatarmida Budya. He can stop him from even taking the dates that are on the mat. So the lender was in the property, in the possession of this property in the interim. He put out his mats and he's gathering these dates falling on the mats of the lender. Even the dates on the mats of the lender will not go to the lender, it goes back to the borrower. Once he's misalik the lender, he's off the field toward the lender, and those dates go back to the borrower. V'yakbinu b'sisni. If the lender lifted the dates up, if he lifted them, v'yakbinu, if he lifted them up, then in baskets, b'sisni means in baskets, then kaninu, he's karinim. If he did an act of akban, then ready, then he's karinu. Ulaman da'amar. And the Mar says further, according to the opinion, kelev shel kapushes ha'mecher, if you owe the kelim of a lekeach in the domain of the meicher, so even though the kelim are resting on the ground of the meicher, but the kelim belong to the lekeach, the buyer, is kind of with such kelim in the domain of the meicher, then I feel like we don't persist. Once the dates fall on the mats of the lender, even though it's the second that the the borrower is ready to misalik the lender, pay him to move him off the field. The field belongs back to the borrower. It's still, at the very least, it's kalim of the lekeach b'shus ha-meicher, kalim of the lender. The mats belong to the lender and the shus of the meicher. And if you hold that such a kenyan works, the lender will be able to keep the dates on the mats, even if he didn't pick it up specifically. He didn't pick them up directly in his baskets. He's still kenyan. Says the Marna. We're at two dots again. Samach Zayin Amud Beis Pshita. Be'asvet Misalki, in a place where the minig is that the borrower can get rid of the lender from the property that he gave him as a mashkin, if that's the minig of the place, but we can get rid of him as soon as he pays back the debt, even if it's before the term that he was giving the mashkin to the lender, he can move him off the property. And the lender says, before he gave the loan, I don't want to be evicted from the property. Meaning, I'm doing a loan on the condition that even though the minig amakam over here is that once the borrower pays back, the whatever term the lender had for this mashkin is just cut short, and the mashkin goes back to the borrower. He's saying, I'm agreed to the loan, but without that term, I want to be able to, without that deal, I want to be able to keep my mashkin for the entire term. So the Gemara says, HaKamad HaMestagilna. That was the Abmach. He made a direct, clear agreement. He made such a stipulation. The money was given with that Tanai. So of course, it's pita that Tanai works. What's the Shaila? Ella says Gemara as follows. Here's the Shaila. Basla Mizaki, in a place where the minig is, the borrower cannot push the lender off the property during the term of this mashkin. The mashkin term. The 4-year term, let's make up a number, that the lender is supposed to be on the property. If the malva pays back prior to that term, the minig amakim is that he can't push away the malva from the field. The malva still retains his 4 years. So if Amar Mistakalna, and the lender, the borrower, I should say, says, in a place where the minig is not to be misalik the lender, if I'm a stakana, I said it right the first time, and the lender agrees, you can get rid of me. Even though the minig is not to get rid of the lender off the property, if you pay me back in full, I'll give you back the property right away, short of its official term, my. So Avadi can make it. Amachi can make all day. You can make whatever agreement you want. But do you need a ma'aseh kinyan to cement that agreement that the lender will have to give the field back to the malva, the bar, I should say, the leiva, once the levy pays back during the term, even though it's not the minig amakim, or the verbal agreement is enough? The Gemara brings our Papa Amar, it's a machlekes. Papa Amar leid tzarech lemikne. You don't have to make a kinyan. Rishesh b'fei David Amar tzarech lemikne mina. So if Papa says you don't have to leid tzarech lemikne mina, you don't have to make a kinyan in order to cement this agreement. The lender, once he verbally agrees, he'll be misalik from the field. The second the debt is paid back, he's obligated to upkeep that commitment. Whereas Rav Sheshis, Rei Davidi says, no, you need a perkinyan. The borrower has to do an act of kinyan. Without an act of kinyan, it's a nice word, it's a nice verbal pledge, but without the act of kinyan, it's not going to be enough. If you look at Rashi, 5 lines up at the bottom of the page, in Rashi, in the wide lines, He said it was just words. He said it was very nice. He wanted to sound nice and generous, b'shasta halva, but he doesn't really mean it because there's a minig amakim. He can always but short of a kinyan, he can revert back to the minig amakim and say, I don't want to change from the minig amakim. I want to do it the regular minig. Amar Ezel of Icy Zuzi. If the borrower says to the lender who's on the field, and he says to him, I'm going to go now and bring you money to pay back the loan. So what he's telling him is, stop taking the produce. I have the money. I'm going to bring it to you. Le'achu. Halacha ta'ak is, the lender can no longer eat the produce of the field because since he's the borrower is misalik, gets rid of the lender from the field when he brings the money, by declaring, I'm going to bring that money, already it's an effect, and the lender can no longer eat the payers. Ezel v'achav ha'isis u'zi. What if, however, the borrower says, I'm going to go and shvitz to bring the money. I'm going to go and be matriach to bring the money. So it sounds like he doesn't have the money yet. He's going to go try to put it together. Ravina Marchavina says, then the lender can still eat, because who says he'll be successful? Doesn't mean he doesn't have the money ready right now, and therefore the lender can still eat. Mazuchu Beidra Mari says, no, if he says I'm going to be matriach to pay it back, since he's in the zone now of paying back, and he's making the declaration, the selik is ready, starting to take place, the lender has stopped eating. Obviously, if he does not successfully, he doesn't still come up with the money, at some point, we're going to say, just because he made the statement, it doesn't have value, but at least right now, we give him a chance to go actually and bring that money, and that's takin alach, vilchus le'achol, alach attack is that he shouldn't eat, the lender should no longer eat, because he has to wait for the borrower to bring the money. But again, if the borrower is unsuccessful, if the borrower is unsuccessful, then the lender is able to eat. The Rishonim explain how long that is. So the Ritva comes along and says, how long does he have to wait? Till the end of that harvesting season. If the borrower says, I'm going to pay you back, and the harvesting season didn't come to fruition yet, then the lender has to wait and not eat. But if the harvesting season ended and the borrower still didn't pay back, then the lender can go and harvest the field. He's sitting on the field. He's been waiting, not touching it, because the borrower is supposed to pay back. But the borrower doesn't pay back, he doesn't have to let the stuff sit there and leave it for the borrower if the borrower hasn't been successful in paying it back. So it really depends how close to the end of the harvesting season the borrower makes the declaration. If it's last week, he has a week. If it's 3 weeks before, he has 3 weeks. But the lender has to wait till the end of the harvesting season. Yes. Says it further. Rav Kana, Rav Papa, Rav Ashi, Lo Achli, Ben Chaisa. Rav Kana, Rav Papa, Rav Ashi, they would not eat from a field that was pledged. The Chiddush here is even Ben Chaisa. Remember we spoke yesterday or 2 days ago. Ben Chaisa is where the lender is benefiting. He has the field of the Mashkin. And he's eating off the field, but he's deducting from the loan. Meaning, without Nechaisa, we said it starts to get awfully close to a situation of ribbis, right? Where the lender is benefiting from the field and getting back his payment. He's getting back more than what he lent. We have Nechaisa, so you're deducting, so that would make it even more kosher. And still, we have these Amaram, like we had yesterday, that were makbid not to eat Nechaisa, because the appearance of ribbis. However, Ravina would eat Nechaisa. Says Taisus, Jav the Bam Taisus. How did this happen? Tema to the ilm. I'm the Bam Taisus. Tema to the ilm Aminan. The Tzivra Abanan. Afil ben Chayis leNeichel. We said earlier a Tzivra Abanan. This is top of this Amud over here on Samas Line and Base on top. What do we see in the third line for the top? That even if there's a whole discussion about a mashkin, a place where the Masalik, about eating ben Chayis and not Chayis, Tzivra Abanan. We said in the end of the third line, Afil ben Chayis leNeichel. Even when you're deducting, you shouldn't eat. Sivra Abanan has to be more careful. And we explained from Rashi. Yes, they remember Rashi quoted a mixture of two psukim. You have to do what's yashar, that's fasisi yashar v'atayev, and you have to do this week's parsha. You have to mekadesh yourself, k'teshim tiyu, meaning these old ideas of being going l'fnim shus adin, not going just based on the letter of the law, especially Tam Chacham. Other people learn from him, and if he acts this way, the people who always do a little bit less at Tam Chacham, and they're going to be over a realist ribbis, so you have to be more careful. So why is Ravina not careful? Taisus gives various answers. Elaborates and makes the question stronger. But his first basic answer is Ravina himself. This is we have to be careful with Anivas. I say careful. I'm not saying Ravina did anything wrong. Chalila. Ravina didn't hold himself to Rabbanan. Ravina himself, he didn't hold himself to Rabbanan. So he didn't feel he has to act with that the chumro called of a Tzivra Abanan. It's interesting because the concern is that people are going to learn from him the wrong way. So it's very nice to be an anav on your own cheshbon, but to be an anav when you're bitaka b'tam chacha, people can learn from you. That's a chiddush. Farshim elaborates here. Perhaps we spoke at just 2 days ago. We spoke at that there was a certain dinim, certain benefits that are given to the midchamim. Their product gets sold first in the market. They get certain advantages. Maybe Ravina never took advantage of any of those advantages either. It was a package deal. He didn't fear tzach. He didn't act as if he was the Tzivra Abanan, and therefore, perhaps, therefore, he wasn't. He didn't act like that. That's Tzivra Abanan, and therefore, he didn't have to have this chumra of not doing menachais. Okay, Amma Zitra, a little behind. We have to hurry up. My time to demand Amnachah menachaisa. What pshat in Ravinu said who ate menachaisa midav estechuzah? Because he learned very simple from estechuzah. How so? What's the shach estechuzah? Estechuzah lav afagav de ka'achal peri tuva Amar Rachmana top of. Finally, Sam Chesam and Aleph, Kaparik Leib Arba Zuze. So, 4 Zuzim per year. Hachraim Leishna. What's going on over here? Halacha is if a person goes and he is Makdash's field. A person is Makdash's field that he got an inheritance. He's Makdash's. So, if he himself could redeem it, but if he redeems it, it goes back to him. If someone else goes and redeems it, then the halacha is that the person who redeems it has rights to use it till Yevil. But then when Yevil comes, it doesn't go back to the Steachuzah, to that family chain. This guy's Makdashit. It goes to the Kohanim. So again, if the guy himself redeems it for Makdash, the original Makdash, his family, it stays back in his family. But if someone else Makdashit, it goes back to, someone else is not Makdashit, sorry, it redeems it for Makdash, then it's only redemption till Yevil. Once Yevil hits, it goes to the Kohanim. So essentially that redemption is only at most a 49-year lease. Right, because it's going back by Yevil. So the Torah gives a fixed price of how much the redeemer has to pay for the field based on a standard size of a field, a base core, I believe it is, how much he has to pay per year for this, for a chemer, I should say, a chemer. A chemer, which is considered a an area that's enough to plant a core worth of barley. So he has to pay, the Torah says, he has to pay 50 slayim for the 49 years, which comes out, if you divide over 50 slayim over 49 years, is a ratio of a sela plus a pundyan, because it's 50 over 49, so it's a little more than a sela per year, is a sela plus a pundyan per year. A sela, you know, is four zuz. So our Gemara just uses the shbach, even though it's a sela plus a pundyan, we just say four zuz, because a sela, the main money here, is four zuz. So there's a fixed ratio, a fixed rate, that he pays four zuz per year. So in a case where there's only 25 years left, he's paying, instead of 50 slayim, he's paying, right, well, it's not really 25, 20, let's say 24 and a half years out of 49 years, he pays exactly 25 slayim. He pays half, that's ratio. The point is the field could produce much more than four zuz in a good year. That amount of area, that amount of space, can produce much more than four zuz in a year, yet the Torah gave a fixed rate of four zuz and not more. So we see the concept of redeeming something for much lower than its value, sanctioned by the Torah. The Torah gave this amount, you redeem it from Hekdesh. It's being redeemed from Hekdesh, and you're redeeming it for much less than its value, you're gaining much more than the rate. So too, when a lender eats ben chaisa, he has the field that the mashkin, the leiva, gave him a mashkin. The malv receives his field, and he does nechaisa, it's okay to do nechaisa, even though you're doing a reduction that doesn't exactly equate to the debt. You're not saying, I'm taking 10 apples, 10 apples are worth $1 each, I'm going to deduct from the loan $10. No, what you say is, for the having the rights for the payers, we'll deduct X amount per year, or X amount per month, less than the value of the actual payers, and it still works, just like you find by Seachuza. That was Ravina's, that the Marzich explains, those who held it, Ravina, and the Chaisa works, the Seachuza is a good simon for that concept. Says Gemara, Umanda Asa Amalach, but the one who says Asa says, what's the comparison? Seachuza Hektashi, Rachman Okmea Pidyan. Seachuza is Hektash, and the Torah says, there's a Din Padiyah, the Torah gave Dine Padiyah, even if the price isn't, it doesn't really relate fully to the value, the Torah gave a pidyan and said it works. We know all that. I mean, what's the flip side? Over here, even if you say it could work, when you find the concept, it still resembles ribbis. At the end of the day, the malva is getting back more than what he lent. He lent an amount of money, and he's getting back a much better rate than what he actually lent. That has the appearance of ribbis. Whenever it's Mexican ribbis, we run into issues. So it's very nice you have a symbol for the concept by Steachuza, but it's not a good enough raya, because there, by Steachuza, there's no issue of Mexican ribbis. Here, there's a new concern of Mexican ribbis. Amar Bashi. Armali Savi de Masa Mechasa, the elders of Masa Mechasa said to me, Stam Mashkanta Shata, that the Stam Mashkin is for a year. L'may Nafkamina, what is Nafkamina di Achalei Shata? If the lender has lived in the field and used it for a year, either produce, Masa Mechasa, then the borrower could push him off by paying, get him off the land by paying back the debt. V'ilai, but if the lender hasn't been there for a full year, L'may Masa Mechasa, Kim Mechasakim, and like you pointed out before, we spoke about that earlier, the Chiddush is that even in a place, Ba'asra, the Masalki, where the minig is that the, let's say that again, the term of the mashka was, lender, you have this land for 5 years. And Ba'asra Masalki, that means the borrower could pay back the lender and get him out of the field even prior to 5 years. It doesn't mean within the first year. The first year, the lender has, once he moves into the field, it makes sense, once he goes to the field and he's plowing and planting, he's tending to the field, the borrower can't push him off until he gets that full year. He has to have a full cycle, a full year. Vamar Bashi. Amrli Sabi Damas Bechasya, the elders of Mashkanta said to me as well, my Mashkanta, what's the lashon, what's the name Mashkanta? What's the etymology of the word we're calling the Mashkin of Mashkanta? The Shchuna Gabe. Mashkanta was the lashon of neighbor. The Shchuna Gabe, because the lashon of dwelling, that the property is dwelling with the lender. L'may Nafkamina. Okay, very nice. You tell me it dwells with the lender, so it's calling a Mashkin, like lashon of Shachin, or the Shachin means to dwell. The Shchina, Kosh Baruch Hu, rests the Shchina, so to speak, dwells with us. Says Gemara, Nafkamina is the Dina de Bar Metzra. The lacha is that if I decide to go sell my property, I have to first offer it to the bordering neighbors. The bordering properties, they have first right of refusal automatically built in. So it's dinah d'bar-metzra, because obviously it's much, much more beneficial for a person to have lots of fields or properties together. It's easier to tend, this kind of economies of scale, to tend to the fields that are together, properties that are together, than to be running around to all different locations. So we offer it to the halacha is you have to offer it first to the border properties, the border neighbors, before someone else. You don't have to sell at a discount. You still sell to them full price, but you have to offer them the right to buy it first. So over here, we're saying the lender has like a din of dina de bar metzra. He's considered a shachin. That's the lashon of mashkanta. Amrava. Halachas like tarshi papanai. Halachas like the tarshi papanai. What does that mean? If you remember, we had a couple of days ago, Rav Papa Someone actually brought me a great mashal, Rabbi Stern from Yisrael Atera, brought a great example of they're related that he asked me the shayla, and we tied it right back in. We just had it in the daf. We learned on a Friday, or Shabbos daf, about this tarshi means like the business arrangement of Rav Papa. If you remember, Rav Papa was a beer brewer, and Rav Papa had money. He was a man of means. So the beer was sold in Tishrei for a cheaper price, right, when it was, you know, brewed, then it was sold for a Nisan, and the price went up. So the fellow came to buy beer for Rav Papa. Rav Papa said, the fellow didn't have money. He came to buy for Rav Papa and Tishrei. Rav Papa said, no problem. From my perspective, I'm happy to keep the beer. It's not going to spoil. I have where to store it. I don't need the money. I'm happy to sell a Nisan at a higher price. You want to buy it for me now in Tishrei. I'm happy to deliver you the product today. But when you pay me Nisan, I want Nisan's price. Now, if this guy would go to a different merchant and buy the product, and the fellow wanted to unload it today in Tishrei, he would sell it to him at Tishrei's price, and there'd be an upbach. Okay, you owe me the money. It's on credit. You owe it to me till whenever you pay back. But he wouldn't be charging Nisan's price. Rav Papa held that charging Nisan's price is not a ribbis for letting the guy pay later, because Rav Papa held, I am happy to keep it. You're the one that wants me to sell to you now. I don't need to sell to you now. I'm happy to keep it to Tishrei. You want to buy now, so I'm going to let you pay me later, but you have to pay me later's price. And the response he said to Rav Papa was, that's not good, because from your perspective, you're Rav Papa, it's not ribbis. But from the guy's buying it, it's basically ribbis, because if you'd get it anywhere else, the market dictates that today's price, this is called 25% less, today's price is $75 for the barrel. And you're charging him $100 for the barrel because you're letting him pay in Nisan, effectively he's paying more for the ability to pay back later. That's ribbis. Just because from your perspective, you're not gaining anything. You don't have the money, you're not tarbis, because you'd have that money anyway if you would just wait. But the maisa, it is still considered ribbis. That was a tie back to Papa. So Agamemnon says that the case, I didn't speak of the case of Rabbi Stern were up to me, was matzah. If someone wants to, someone goes and sells someone or gives someone matzah after Pesach. If you go to the stores, matzah is sold right now at 50% discount. Some of the matzahs. It's a 50% discount, right? Depends what matzah. Rabbi Kana told me actually last year, he tried to buy it at the end of Pesach from one of the sellers, and the seller told him that the price is still the same. The price did not go down after Pesach. But if you go to the regular stores, the supermarkets that sell, you know, these box matzahs, the price is slashed by 40-50%. So a guy went to his friend on the last day of Pesach, or Isru Chag, and said, I need 3 matzahs. And the friend said, no problem. So next year, you know, pay me back 3 matzahs. So next year of Pesach, right, the price is going to be much more. So is that okay or not? That was the shayla. So we thought that would be a very good connection to Rav Papa's case. This person is not... This person is... it depends. It depends also if you say the matzah lasts. Pashas, the matzah does last from year to year. It's certainly... They bake it Sukkot time, right? They start baking Sukkot time. Okay. But that was our connection. Anyway, Agamar is saying, Rav says that the halacha is not like Rav Papa, meaning you have to be concerned over there just because for you it's not a benefit. You're not gaining because you would have waited anyway. If that guy is paying extra, that's a problem. Okay, next pesach of Rava. He's got 2 more pesachim. The like shtarim mechazonai. The halacha is we don't paskin like shtarim mechazonai. Like chachirei narshai. Again, katarsha papanai. We just explained is katarsha of papa. That was like the tarsha sale of her papa for a couple of ago. Shtarim mechazonai. What's that? The zakvile the ravcha karna. What they used to do is they would add the profit into the Karen, which means, this is already almost touching on to what we're going to get to in the Bamad Ahmed, head to risk stories, but there's a little before that. A person would advance the money that's needed for an investment. He'd advance the money, and the idea was, he's putting out money, let's say, to go buy apples to sell in the market. He'd give $100 to go buy $100 of apples, wholesale, and then when the guy goes and sells the apples retail, that $100 should turn into $150. So what he would write is, he would write right away into the debt that he wasn't owed $100, that he lent into the deal, let's call it half the profit, $125. So part of the $25, his portion, his half of the profit was already considered as a loan written into the deal. So he lent only $100, and you're writing as if he lent $125. Again, it's not really outright ribbis, because he's really just writing his share of the profit into what's owed to him, but in an extent, it could be ribbis. The Mark explains that this shtar mechazonai, the halach is no good. Why? Mi yemid av ravcha. So, again, let's read it again inside. Exactly, ravcha akarna. You add his portion of the profit, you add it to the original Karen. So in our example, instead of writing he lent 100, you write he lent 120, he's owed 125. And because of the shtar, it's written in the shtar. And the problem is, mi yemid av ravcha. It's all great, that system, and it's not considered ribbis. If there's a profit, Yitaka was just writing, he's owed his chelik of the profit. But if there's no profit,
and he's being paid back 125, then effectively he lent 100, got paid back 125. That's of course a classic issue of ribis. So the son of Amemar said to Ravashi, Abba of Rachiba, father Amemar, does write these types of shtare chuznai, mechuznai, where he does write the profit into the original shtar. However, but when they come back, the merchant, and tells my father Amemar what happened in the deal, if it was successful, then he keeps that amount that's owed to him. And if it wasn't successful, he only charges the original loan. He doesn't charge more than that. If it's not successful, he doesn't charge more because that would be ribis. So father Amemar writes it in, but he doesn't bill it unless it's real profit. He doesn't bill it as an interest. As an interest payment, it's rather it's a profit sharing. Says the Gemara, Amaleis, or Vashi said to Amemar's son, Mar Bar Amemar, very nice. That's all good, this setup, writing the shtar, if your father's still around, and he'll trust the merchant, and he won't charge if there's no profit. What happens if your father, Chalila, will die, and now the Yisaimim have the shtar, they have rights to collect, and it just says, they're owed 125. Even though they only gave 100, it only says, it says 125. It's a problem to write such a shtar, because if he's around to deal with it, fine, he knows the truth, and it won't be, he won't collect something which he's not entitled to. But if the Yisaimim pick up the shtar, they're just going to collect the full 125, and even if there's no profit, and that'll be a problem of ribbis. Says the Gemara, this we have this Gemara elsewhere as well, this idea, having a shkaga shiatz mafei hashalad. Rav Ashi making a comment that what happens if a member dies? We're not supposed to talk, we know we don't talk that way. We always talk in hypothetical. If Reuven does this with Shimon and then Reuven dies, but we don't talk about specific people like that because it's like a shkaga that came out from the mouth of the ruler. It's like an error that came out from the mouth of the one who's ruling in charge. And Amemar Nebuch was Nifter because of that example that Rav Ashi had given. Okay, but the bottom line is, Rav Ashi explained, but the problem was that it could lead to problem. It could lead to problems if the original fellow, even if he's going to not collect, if there's no profit, it will lead to problems in a case where the original guy who lent the money, the investor, is out of the picture. He died, and now his children are coming to collect. They're going to collect the money regardless, whether there's profit or not, and that will be like a ribis. And lastly, chachire nishroi are these leases of nishroi. What was the case over there? The kasviachi, the people of Narish, would write as follows: Mishkan le plani ara le plani, v'hodeh chachar minei. And he went and did a chachiris back. Chachiris, we know, is essentially, I can go and lease a property from you, and the deal is that I have to pay you a certain amount of the produce, of the payris, to cover the lease. So from the land itself, I take a portion. It's a little different than aris. Aris is, it's a portion of the produce itself. Chachiris is, I kind of owe you, it's more of a pledge, I owe you a certain portion of this produce. I owe you a certain part of produce. It's my job to make sure producers are to get it from somewhere else. I got to deliver to you X amount of produce, and anything above that is my profit. As opposed to aresis, is kind of a set percentage split across the board. Bad year for both of us, bad year. Good year for both of us, good year. It's a split. Okay. By the way, what they used to do is like as follows. We've been talking about the past, you know, yesterday's daf and the beginning of today's daf. We're talking about the borrower giving a mashkin to the lender. The borrower would give a mashkin, a field, to the lender. The lender would take this very same field and he would rent it back to the borrower in chachiris, and the borrower then would pay him a rental fee from his own land. It's his own land, really, but he gave it as a mashkin to the lender, and then he'd pay a rental fee to the lender for being able to use the land in the interim. So we're saying that's a problem. Now, why is that a problem? Technically speaking, if the lender would do this with someone else, if the lender got the mashkin from the borrower and he would go to a chiris with a third party, that lechayr should be fine. The problem over here is it's much worse because it's the borrower himself who borrowed money, then went, gave the land as a mashkin, and then rented it back. So basically he's paying the lender, he's going to pay back the debt that he owes, plus a rental fee for his own land. So it's really, essentially, it's like a ribbis. So really, it technically should be okay as long as there's a proper kinyan made, just like the lender can give it to a third party, he can give it back to the borrower, it can be merci, but it's even worse than that. Why? He says, why is the problem? Rav says, no good. Amos kana dakinile. Because the lender didn't go and make a kinyan on it and then be makna back to the borrower, in which case, if it was done proper with proper kinyanim, then we could say the borrower was taka renting like anybody else, and therefore it wouldn't be a ribbis. In our case, no kinyanim were made. So it all was like in the mind. So basically what's happening is the borrower is borrowing money, and then he's also paying back an additional fee for using his own land. That's a problem of ribbis. The Marth says, therefore, for ida the kasvi hachi, now that we got a little smarter, more sophisticated with these shtari nashoi type leases, where we actually demonstrate in the shtar that the lender took possession of the mashkin and then rented it back. So now it's not just a wink-wink agreement and you're just playing ribbis. It's actual, a real kinyan took place, says the Gemara. The lender took hold of the mashkin. It stayed by the lender for a certain amount of time. This land was by the mashkin. And then he then went and gave it back in a chachiras to the borrower. So in this case, now already you got rid of some of the obvious issues that it's basically like a ribbis payment. It's much better because it really went to the lender. We allow it, even though there would be epic element of it doesn't smell the best, doesn't look the best. We still allow it. You know why? If you're not going to allow the malvas to get the mashkin and be able to, they're not interested in running a field either. And be able to lease it back to the levas, they're not going to lend money. So in order to keep the doors open for borrowers to get money from lenders, they allow this to happen. Shapir dami, therefore it's allowed. And the Mara says, but even though we said that's what people do and they do it in a way that is a little better and therefore it's allowed, still it's not allowed. The Mara falls off it. Vlad milsi, it doesn't look good. It's still a problem. It looks like the consideration that the levas paying the malva for his own field has very, very much an appearance of ribbis. It looks like ribbis. It's the Mexic ribbis is too strong of a problem, and therefore we say it's no good. Zuck the Mishnah. Before we see the Mishnah, we have to get back to a basic idea. This is the concept of where Hetzer comes in. If a person lends money to his friend, and he guarantees the money. That's a loan. He guarantees the money. The borrower guarantees the money back to the lender. That's a classic loan. So he can only pay back the amount that he borrowed. He can't pay back a penny more. Because if you're guaranteeing the principal, you're guaranteeing what you borrowed, plus you pay extra, that's, of course, ribbis. If it's ribbis up front, if it's a ribbis guaranteed amount up front, that's ketutza, that's mamash ribbis deraisa. If it's just paying extra on the back end, it wasn't a guaranteed amount, that's still ribbis midrabanan, and that's all afak ribbis, that's all problematic. Okay. But let's say by an investment, by a business deal. If Reuven is a man of means, he has cash, and Shimon is a guy who wants to go do work and try to make some money, and he needs Reuven's capital to do his deal. So Shimon borrows money, or let's say Reuven invests money into Shimon's deal. So, and then they're going to go and split the profits. If Shimon goes and makes money, they'll split the profits. Now, on the face of it, that'd be a very nice arrangement. Problem is, how do we look at it? If Shimon is fully responsible for the money the whole time, so essentially it's a loan, he borrowed it. If he's going to share any of the profit he makes with Reuven, that's ribbis. It may not be ribbis ketutza, but it may be ribbis ketutza actually even. But it's certainly, at the very least, ribbis avakribis. Certainly ribbis terabanim, because he's borrowing the money, he's guaranteeing the principal, and then he's giving extra. That's mamish ribbis. That's a ribbis problem. And so that's if you view it as ava, you got a problem of ribbis. The way to make it kosher would be is that Shimon's holding the money for Reuven as pekadon. He's holding Reuven's money as pekadon. And if Taka gets lost, if the deal goes sour, is Reuven's loss. Reuven loses his money. And if it does well, then Shimon will contribute some of the profits back to Reuven. Now that's a great setup if Shimon has an amazing track record and he makes tons of money and it's difficult to get into Shimon's fund and to invest with him, then maybe it's a good setup where Shimon's not taking responsibility for losing the money, but he gets a share of the profits. But in most scenarios, the fact that Reuven has the money and he's wealthy and Shimon does have the money, then Reuven's not going to invest with Shimon if Reuven has to take all the risk. Essentially, Reuven's taking all the risk that if it goes bad, it's his loss. And if it goes well, he shares the profits with Shimon. You're not going to have people who have means providing capital to those who need the means to go invest. It won't work. So therefore, the Chazal devised a system, and that system is, it's called Chatzi Mekach, Chatzi Halva. Chatzi Mekach, Chatzi Halva. Chatzi Pekadon, I'm sorry. Chatzi Pekadon, Chatzi Halva. And what that means is, we look at the money that Reuven uses. He invests $100 still, like we had in the beginning. But we look at it as half the money is a ava, which Taka the Shimon is allowed to guarantee. Half the money is a pekadon. Now that he's only assuming half the risk, okay, it's a little bit less onerous. And then Shimon goes and deals, invests the money, and tries to make a profit. And then they can split the profit. And we're avoiding the issue of Aina, because it's only chatzi ava, chatzi mekach. But there is one concern still. If Shimon's working the money and he's going to pay profit to Reuven on the halva portion as well, or there's a part of it that's guaranteed, then why is that problem part still not a problem of ribbis? So in order to avoid that, there has to be a fee. There has to be a fee that's paid to this active investor, the one who's active in the project. He has to receive some sort of fee to remunerate him for his work, for his time, and therefore, once he's being paid for that, therefore, it's not an issue of ribbis. That's the basic idea, and there's more to it. That's the basic idea, and our mission is going to explain, or at least mention, this fee that the operator has to receive in order to avoid the issue of ribbis. That's the Mishnah. Chemini is a storekeeper who you're going to give him a supply of produce, and he's just oversee the store and sell it instead of at wholesale rates, which the guy's providing it, got the produce at wholesale rates, gives it to the storekeeper to sell it at retail rates. And this fellow is providing the stuff to the chevani, and he's sharing the profits. So you can't do it lemechsa schar, to split the schar, or to do more of a regular age-old investment, to give money to the guy, to go buy payers, to go do the whole deal from scratch. In both these cases, again, to share the schar, you can't do it. You have to give him schar as a worker. He has to be paid as a worker to pay for his time and efforts. Otherwise, he's delivering that time and effort for free, which is a form of ribbis in and of itself. Amos Shivan, a similar vein, they used to have that people that had farms or the like would give out some of their young hens in order to let them go make eggs and produce. And the fellow who'd watch it and help let these tiny girls produce eggs and the like would share part of the profits. So you cannot have a commission that someone will take care of the hens to, you know, take care of the eggs for half the profit, or have someone, you know, you go in and you assess the value of the baby cows or the baby horses to the herdsmen in order for them to go raise them, and they'll share half the profit of what it grows. You can't do that. Again, you have to provide the schar for the guy's time, for his work, plus also whatever mezainis is needed in the process has to be provided. Otherwise, if the worker is providing all this, he's providing it in lieu of the fact that it's being lent to him, which is, again, a ribbis issue. Avo. Besides the mission, interesting, one thing you can do is, what you could do is, if you don't do a proper assessment of how much the calves or the baby, the colts, the baby horses are worth right now, rather you just give it to this guy to watch it, and at some point down the road they're just going to split whatever it becomes worth. That's okay. That's a problem. That's fine. And over there you don't have to give a payment. We'll see more about that. They would raise the animals until they reach a third of their growth. The chamar shtei te'enes, and they raise the donkey. Just through the merchant explaining what the typical responsibility of the herdsman is. The animals are typically raised till a third of their growth, or the donkey until it's able to carry a burden and be of use to be stopping things. Tana. When we spoke about paying him like a pile, kipayel batel, he's paid like a pile batel. This shemveni is being paid like a worker who's idle. Mark explains, Mike Babata, what type of payment do you pay a person who's butthole? Really, it means the other way, meaning the guy's working, the chemist's working, he's not doing nothing. It's like, you know, it's one thing to pay a guy that, how much would you agree to take from your, let's say, your $300 an hour salary? What would you deduct it to pay to do nothing? You're not going to take zero because you'd rather work and make some money. But if you do 20 times to do nothing, maybe take $60 an hour to do nothing instead of working for 300. But over here, he's working. The chemi is working. So why are we saying kapal batal? Mark explains, tap on base. You're right. I'm rabbi kapal batal shayis malacha. It means, tap rashi, imaya nagar, a nafach. Let's say this guy was, you know, some sort of craftsman. He was a blacksmith or a carpenter, and that's a difficult job, and he would be paid X. How much would he be willing to take as a reduction to be mevatel for that melacha, which is melacha kveid, the Rashi says, and to do melacha, which is a melacha kala? How much would he be willing to take a reduction? And that difference, actually, that difference is what he's paid more. That difference is what he's paid more than the regular chemveni. That's what the Mefarshim explain. In Rashi, Rashi doesn't say this, but that's what the Mefarshim explain. That difference where he's paid more than a regular chemveni. Regular chemveni, let's say, normally makes X. He gets to make a little more, meaning because he's someone that would normally have a higher paying job, he's not doing that harder work, so he has to get a reduction. But the amount he'd be willing to take is a reduction to do chemveni work instead, which is more than the typical chemveni. That seems to be the explanation. That's the amount you have to pay him. The Mordechai now just explains, why didn't he teach me this? Teach me this chiddush by a chemveni, where the guy, the investor, we'll call him, is providing the payers for the chemveni to sell, or where he gives him money to go buy payers and go do the work to make the sale. Why are you giving me both cases? The tzvicha. If you tell me the case of chemveni, chemveni who decided like a kapel batel, I'd say by chemveni, it's sufficient to pay him like a kapel batel. Because he's not doing that much work. He already has the stuff provided for him. He's just selling it. He's overseeing the sale, collecting money. No, that's enough. But he's given money, the operator is given money to go buy Paris. He's got to go, and for the money he received, he has to go buy the product, and then go to the market, and then resell it. So that's much more of a tercha. Maybe it's not good enough to pay him like a pearl bottle. He's got to be paid like the full wage of what he'd normally make doing something else. So Kamash Bon, the Kamal Bat Tzchar is sufficient. If you turn a Mayas Likah from Paris, and if you say the second case, a Mayas Likah from Paris, I would say, Hav Amina, Hasim Kudu Boy Kamal Batal. Over there is where you need Kamal Batal, even that amount, Mishkushum, the Nafish Tircha is not a Tircha. Avachemini with a Tircha so little, Len Nafish Tircha, Amos Agli, Mashu Malma, as long as you give him a little ana. As the Mar is going to give an example, what's the minimum ana? I feel like Taval Imai El Batsir. You let him dip you let him dip his food in your fish sauce a little bit. That's it. When you let him eat one dried fig, maybe it's a minimal amount that you give him for his efforts. That would be sufficient. Kamashban, that's enough. Kamashban, no, it's not enough. Tzricha. In both cases of the Mishnah, side by chemini and side by giving money to buy papers, he has to have a full proper payment of a. He has to be like a pile bottle. He has to be a pile bottle, not the minimum amount, not too much like his regular wages, but somewhere in between. Okay, let's go job further. Stop soon. Says the Gemara. He says, "Kami zitargo malin simon." That's the simonim. We discussed the Mishnah about the goats, the hens, and all that. Tarabanim kamu schare. What's the schar of this fellow who's raising these animals? Be meruba ube muet diver meir. Remeir says, "You know what the schar is? The schar is whatever they agree upon. Be meruba ube muet. Whatever schar they agree upon, that's the schar, and that's fine. That's Remeir shita." Rabbi Daimer, no. The example we just gave a moment ago. No, all this guy who's raised the animal needs to take for payment is either just dipping his vegetable into some fish sauce or getting one fig. As long as he gets some sort of payment, that's enough for the wage. That's the most lenient amount that needs to be paid to avoid ribbis issues. Rameir says whatever they made up. And Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Aimer, nice schar mishalim. You get the schar in full. If you jump into Rashi, what's schar mishalim? Kepayal batal, like kepayal batal. So it seems clear that Rashi's learning that the shita of our Mishnah, the Tana of our Mishnah, it says kepayal batal, the way Rabbi explained in our Mishnah, is the shita of Shimon ben Yochai that he's being paid kepayal batal. Let's see a couple more lines. It says the Gemara, Tana Banan, Ein shabu leser, izim leser, chelim, vle kaldav she'enai oisav eichel. You can't assess goats or sheep or anything that doesn't work, but it does eat. Lamechza, to give half-half, to split the profit half-half. That is the Tanakam Shita. No, you could assess the goats because the goats do produce milk. And even the ewe, that's the female, that's the sheep, sorry. Because you can shear the wool and you get the worker gets those benefits throughout the process. And when you rinse them, and you pluck them, you get the benefits of their wool. The tarnagolus meshi isa vaychalos, and the tarnagolus, it produces eggs. So it does eat also, but it produces eggs. So since all these things do have some sort of, they do produce something, the worker is getting those benefits throughout, and therefore you can have this regular major. Tanakama, who says that you can't make a major for these items, because you can't compare. The amount you get in shearings and in milk doesn't come close to the amount of schar that should be paid for the tircha and the mezainis. And therefore it's not a good upmach, and therefore you can't just split 50-50. You have to make sure to do a good payment to pay for the work. Says the Gemara, when it comes to giza and milk, the shearings of the milk, that everyone agrees, Tanakam basically agree that, I'm sorry, I lost my place. Again, sorry, the Mar asks a question. I said as a statement, it's a question. Is that not enough? The fact that you're getting shearings and milk, why shouldn't that cover the wages of the worker? Why is the taka not a gataina? So Mark explains, you're right. Everyone agrees that sake is enough. The case where you're only getting whey, or the wool you're getting is like the wool that's shed, the sheddings of the wool. If you get proper wool, proper milk, that avada could pay for the payment of the pile. But when you're getting only whey or shearings of wool, that's where that machlek is. Tanakam savar, and those things are not enough to cover full wages, and therefore it's not good enough. And basically, the savar kavua, he holds like his father of Yehuda. What did Yehuda say? Even just dipping his vegetable into the fish broth or getting one fig is enough to take care of the problem. That's enough for wages. Savar kavua, damar filo tavi my el batir v'leichem my el gregus achas zel schar. It's enough schar, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda held it's enough. Even the whey or the sheddings, whereas according to the Tanakama, it wasn't enough. It's got to be like a proper payment, like Rav Shimon Chai said. We'll pause over here and pick it up in Mitzvah tomorrow.